the sweet, sweet sounds, you know. Yeah, I. Na, now. So what? Finally the herbs come around. The high grade when me a look for me get it by the pound. Yeah, sweet sensei a come around. Me a take a little jar and pass it around. So finally the herbs come around. The high grade when man a look for me stock it by the pound. Yeah, when Babylon a come around.
Hello everyone and welcome to Reefer Rhetoric, Stop the Political Propaganda.
Quit it. Stop it.
As usual, I'm your host, Dean Schwag.
And I'm Professor Blunston.
This is episode 14 of the show and today is Tuesday, March 27th, 2012. Thank you very much for joining us. Show notes are available on our website at reeferrhetoric.com and you can send emails to reeferrhetoric@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at Reefer Rhetoric and find us on Facebook. Also, for those wishing to share a story, feel free to call and leave a voicemail at 254-307-2872 and we'll be happy to consider playing it on the air. Please subscribe to our show on iTunes, pass us around to your friends,
pass it.
Take a brief moment to roll up a review on the Reefer Rhetoric iTunes page. As usual, guys, our first segment is True Facts. Professor Blunston, you want to lead us off?
All right, people, come on with us. Say it.
Zero deaths, zero overdoses. Fact. Our next fact is a quote from Jimmy Carter. He said, penalties against possession of a drug should not be more damaging to an individual than the use of the drug itself. And where they are, they should be changed.
Fact.
Fact.
John Adams, the second president of the United States, said, we shall by and by want a world of hemp more for our own consumption.
Fact! Alright guys, our second segment is spoken words from Professor Blunston.
This piece is entitled, Lit. Politicians in the media spread negative propaganda about cannabis talking shit. They need to put the bottle of beer down and hit a bowl of this vanilla kush and get lit. Train wreck is perfect for treating neck, back, and nerve pain, although it'll give you dry mouth and you won't be able to spit. But I promise you, after you toke it, you'll say, ooh, wee man, I'm lit. Now, Prixotorum smoked swag in college. That's why he quit. If he would have taken a course at Oaksterdam and smoked Blue Dream, I promise he would have gotten lit. Dropping ecstasy, leaving the club with a pacifier in your mouth so your teeth won't grit. Captain Crunch is a sativa that'll have you dancing on the floor for hours. Lit. And without the negative side effect. Peace. One love. All praises due to the Creator.
Thank you very much, Professor Blunston. You guys can follow Professor Blunston on Twitter at Prof. Blunston, and he can be reached by email at profblunston@gmail.com. All right, guys, at this time, we're going to go ahead and play a couple more interviews from Rice University with Alan Carruthers and Russ Jones. This first one is with Alan Carruthers.
Yeah, and you know, and Alan Carruthers, we really, you all pray for him, okay, because he's going through...
Yes.
Various illnesses, but in this interview you actually hear, and he's actually a patient that wants to have cannabis legal here in Texas, okay? But let's check out this interview. We're having some technical difficulties here, Schwag?
Yeah, we are. Unbelievable. Of course, this has to happen. All right, today on Reefer Rhetoric, we have Alan Carruthers. Alan, you want to tell the listeners a little bit more about yourself?
Well, I initially grew up in Florida, ended up in Texas doing, of all things, a ministry role at a church in Waco in partnership with another organization. And 2 years into that, I realized that wasn't going to work out. So I went to work for a local children's home and did that for several years. About 3 years into that job, I came down with a medical condition called myelofibrosis, and probably had it for years before that, but just didn't realize it. And anyway, the condition sidelined me to more of a light duty type of role, and that in turn caused a great deal of pain and discomfort, and I began to seek some treatment options. You know, the doctor who diagnosed me was kind of flippant and said, well, you know, the research says that most people only live for 5 years with this disease, but, you know, you're young, you'll probably live longer than that. And I wasn't about to be one of those statistics, so I began doing some research, and I grew up in a home. My father was a cop, and just to kind of give you a history, he was from way back. He was even friends with Henry Anslinger, so, you know, came up in that law and order kind of home, mm-hmm. and I started doing some research, and when I was 18, I'd tried marijuana, and, you know, was a little taken back by the effect of it, and so I hadn't tried it for years, and when I began to research my disease and looking at the factors that caused the condition, I saw some things that were kind of common, and that was that it appears that that the cannabinoids and the compounds in marijuana seem to have an effect on the cofactors of the disease. Mm-hmm. But of course, living in Texas, that wasn't really an option. Well, yeah.
Before you get further into your illness, weren't you a part of law enforcement as well?
I was. I worked for law enforcement for 4 years in Tampa, and did a whole series of different jobs there with that. But I decided not to go through academy, and shortly after that, left law enforcement. I wanted to buckle down and get my education, so I went in and knocked out my degree, and then went to graduate school.
Okay, but had you not been diagnosed with this particular illness,
right,
what would have been your stance on cannabis? Then what was your stance on cannabis?
Right, right.
Before,
what was your stance on,
yeah,
stance
on cannabis
before
you were diagnosed,
right,
compared to after being diagnosed?
You know, I was kind of, you know, live and let live on that. I wasn't concerned at all. I mean, I have family members who smoked, and,
right,
and it really wasn't a concern. It just, for me personally, wasn't something that I saw, you know.
Yourself did.
Yeah, I didn't see myself
did
doing
you
that.
Drink?
Occasionally.
Okay.
There's a lot of alcoholism in my family, so I tended to try to regulate that. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, other than that, the cannabis has done what for as far as your illness? What has
well,
it relieved?
A couple of years ago, I did an experiment for a couple months, and I cooked myself up a batch of the Rick Simpson oil, I used alcohol as my solvent instead of the compounds that he does. Yeah, because well, he uses a benzene based, in which benzene is a carcinogen, so I wasn't real comfortable with using that. So, you know, I did that for 2 months just to see if there would be any effect, measurable effect. I was between clinical trials. I'd been through five of them now, and just decided it was giving benefit for pain management for my disease, but my counts per se didn't improve, and I just felt like that either it would take a lot more dosing than I was able to afford at the time, or better quality possibly oil than I was making, but I knew that if I was going to do that, my disease doesn't necessarily respond to standard treatments. So the only thing that really they know of was a bone marrow transplant. And so I had my spleen removed in April of last year so that they could do the bone marrow transplant in September. And they did the transplant. And I was at MD Anderson yesterday. We're here in Houston now. And the doctors say that everything's looking good. My counts are almost perfect now. So the cells have engrafted, But the issue now is pain management and how to handle the pain control. And one thing about marijuana is that it...
Cannabis.
Oh, I said the M word, didn't I?
Yeah, it's all right. A bad word.
Yeah.
Well, something I really wanted to ask you was, how does your body feel on cannabis compared to on the... What medicine? I don't know what pharmaceuticals you were taking.
Oh, gosh. I take a whole list. Yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot that I don't take now. What I can tell you is that cannabis removes the pain. When somebody was talking to me a long time ago when we were doing an article for the local newspaper, the way I described it was like somebody taking a wrench and kind of loosening up the bones.
Okay.
There are no pills or pharmaceuticals that I've taken that have had a similar effect to that.
None. Okay. How do you feel mentally after you smoke cannabis compared to the pharmaceutical?
Well,
wake up, the pain is gone. How do you feel mentally?
I can't really use, especially now, I can't use anything because the doctors have prohibited me from using any cannabinoids.
Okay.
Probably because they want to pump me full of oxycodone, or now they're saying methadone or things like that. But I do have more mental clarity, of course, but I try to be strategic and take it like at bedtime, so that during the daytime I'm alert. But I get carryover effect through the day, which is something I don't get with the codeine-based, morphine-based, whatever it is, drugs. Those don't have a carryover effect. Whereas something about cannabis tends to, I didn't use the M word that time, tends to give a...
you say carryover effect. What do you mean?
Exactly. It tends to, I can't really describe it other than to say, maybe it's the anti-inflammatory effect, you know? But it's something that lasts into the next day.
Right.
Whereas if I take...
The pills you have to take.
Right. In fact, when I first took it with my disease, I had like 2.5-3 days of effect from it.
Really?
Yeah.
When you first took...
Oral administration of it.
Okay.
And it was just a cookie, but a friend had made it. It was a pretty strong cookie.
Right, okay. And you but that effect, did that effect make you feel good for the next few days, or when you you say it lasts, meaning it relieved pain for that particular period of time?
Right. I mean, it had an effect for about 2.5-3 days. I mean, literally
relieving.
It didn't, and like I said before, it was like somebody warming my bones, so loosening it up.
Okay.
So that was the only way I could describe it.
Right.
And so to me, it was making a connection with those, either the anti-inflammatory effect or making a direct connection somehow with whatever caused the inflammation in the first place or something. But it was a highly effective route to go. Much more effective than any medication that I run.
Absolutely. Where can listeners find out more about you or contact you or anything like that, Alan?
Best place is on Facebook, Alan, A-L-A-N. Carruthers is C-A-R-U-T-H-E-R-S. Just look me up on Facebook, and that's the easiest way to get a hold of me.
All right, again, we're at Rice University campus, and thank you very much for joining us. I'm Dean Schwag.
I'm Professor Blunston.
Thank you very much, guys.
Bye-bye.
All right, guys, and this next interview is with Russ Jones.
Yeah, and he has a book out that's a great book. It's entitled Honorable Mentions.
Honorable Intentions.
Honorable Intentions, my bad. And it's
today on Reefer Rhetoric, we've got Russ Jones.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead and play the
interview. Go ahead and play it?
He has a great book.
On Reefer Rhetoric, we've got Russ Jones with LEAP. Is that correct?
Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, yes.
All right. And is there anything you want to say as far as just introducing yourself to our listeners?
Well, I've been involved in the so-called war on drugs, which is really a war on people,
right?
Since its inception. Mm-hmm. In 1970, I was a police officer, and then I became a narcotics detective, DEA task force. I left law enforcement. I worked government intelligence in Central America during Iran-Contra. I have been a guest in the ministries of interior of both the Soviet Union and China, working as a consultant with their narcotics officers. Yeah. In the world of academia, I've written and done studies on the impact of drug abuse on the crime index of communities, also programs training law enforcement officers how to recognize the physiological and psychological effects of drugs. Mm-hmm. I've testified in court as an expert on how the physiological or psychological effects of drugs may have been involved with the rape and homicide cases.
Right.
And I've also developed, written, and implemented courses for court-mandated clients for drugs. So I've seen the issue of the war on drugs from all sides.
Right. Okay, so the physiological and psychological effects that you have actually had to testify on, have any of those people been actually cannabis, users? Have you found that any of those people were basically hard cannabis users?
Well, I don't know if they were hard cannabis users. I think the answer I would say is I have not seen anybody who was a cannabis abuser.
Right.
Now, and that was interesting because when I was involved in the treatment side, that's true today in all your treatment programs, almost everybody comes from the court system. Okay. Well, the trouble is,
so they're mandated, correct?
They're mandated, but they're mandated because of possession, not because they're addicted or not because they were doing something crazy. Only it would be as if I got sent to an alcohol program because I had a bottle of wine with my groceries. Well, just because I have a bottle of wine or a six-pack doesn't mean I'm an alcoholic. Well, just because you have a marijuana roach in your ashtray doesn't mean you go. So that's what I was seeing coming through these programs. I was seeing people who were there only because the court said they had to be there. They did not have mental problems, psychological problems, or they weren't showing any problems because of use of marijuana. Mm-hmm. Now, in fact, the one drug and the only drug where I really had clients in my classes that that would be about 20%, and that was alcohol.
Mm-hmm. That was a problem.
Right. Alcohol, yes. Heroin is a very addictive drug, and it causes addiction problems, but it's such a small percentage of people who abuse that drug. I mean, it's marijuana. Of the illegal drugs,
cannabis
is the drug that is most likely used.
Right.
And then you get into the amphetamines and the depressants. But alcohol is the drug that causes the problem.
It does. What's legal. What do you see as the future for cannabis? Give our listeners some hope.
Oh, I think we do not have to get to 25 states that have medical marijuana to get past the tipping point. I think we're within two or three more states, mm-hmm. and we're going to hit that tipping point where the federal government is going to begin to back off, lay off this crackdown on states who are allowing, because I don't know how many there are now.
16.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to guess 17, but 16 states in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. have medical cannabis. It's only going to take a couple more to reach that tipping point.
Right. My question to you was what actually, from coming from law enforcement, okay, what actually made you change your views in regards to ending this prohibition on, and I really hate using the word drug war because my concern is with cannabis, hemp.
Okay.
That's my concern because I know that that's zero deaths, zero overdoses, that's what I know. But the other thing, but what actually made you actually?
Yeah, I outline this in my book, Honorable Intentions.
Please pick that up, audience. Sorry.
Honorable Intentions by Russell Jones. I mean, that's all you need to do is Google Honorable Intentions by Russell Jones. But I point out I did not have an epiphany. I started asking questions, though. Of course, I started asking questions about failed government policy when I was a helicopter pilot in Vietnam. So I've always been one who asked questions. So I started asking questions as a narcotics officer, narcotics detective. In fact, I'd have these conversations, which I detail in my book. For example, my boss and I would be sitting after work at a bar drinking alcohol, and I'd say, "Boss, would you be happy if we could seize 50 or 60% of all the drugs in our community?" And he says, "Well, yeah." He says, "But you're not trying to tell me that would reduce use." And I said, "No, but that would increase the price of the drug, and therefore people are going to have to go out and commit more crimes to pay for the drug because it's a black market product." And my wheels were turning, his wheels were turning, and I couldn't quite articulate it then. And it wasn't until later, about 1980, when I began to realize that while arresting rapists and robbers was the premier thing to do as a police officer, arresting drug users was the scraping the bottom of the barrel. And then after, the Soviet Union, I became such I became so well known and an expert in the subject that the Soviet Union actually invited me over there to work. This was before the fall of the wall, The Soviet Union invited me over there, and I worked with their narcotics officers. I went on raids on meth labs. I saw drug dealing on the streets. I went to their rehab programs and talked to recovering addicts of all drugs. And I came home with this question: if the Soviet Union, as tight and controlling of its citizens as it was behind the Iron Curtain, couldn't control drugs like cannabis through prohibition, then how were we as a free people going to?
Right. Wow, that makes a lot of sense.
And we can't, come on, we can't even keep it out of our prisons. Mm-hmm. There is no more secure place in our country than our prisons, and we cannot keep it. So how do we expect to keep it out of the schools if it's a black market product?
Right.
And so it needs to be controlled. The drug cartels are handling all this, and we need to take it out of their hands.
Right.
And we need to put it in the hands of what I call the market. And that's... we're close with medical marijuana. I think we are medical cannabis, medical marijuana. The movement in California regulate marijuana like wine. Those incremental steps are what are going to be the tipping point for cannabis.
Good. Listeners, you are listening to us broadcast live from Rice University in Houston, Texas. You are now listening to actually LEAP coordinator. Is it correct?
Well, law enforcement against prohibition. I'm a speaker. And Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, we're a nonprofit international organization of current and former members of law enforcement, judges, prosecutors, chiefs of police, narcotics detectives, like I was, police officers, who believe that the war on drugs is a failed policy.
Where can they find out more about LEAP?
LEAP.cc, or just Google Law Enforcement Against Prohibition.
Perfect.
Well, listeners, you've heard it. Here we are, broadcasting live, Arifa Rhetoric. Here at Rice Campus University in Houston, Texas.
Thank you very much, guys.
Just want to say again what a privilege it was to be over there at Rice.
Privilege. But it was a real privilege to talk to Russ. I mean,
he's been everywhere. I mean, that man is so knowledgeable.
It blew my mind, just all the things that he's done. And just think about this. I was thinking, when we were really sitting there talking to him, I'm thinking to myself, man, before I was born, dude, you didn't bust a bunch of my people. Man,
you were born. Think about me. I know, man.
Yeah, really. You were.
He'd already fought half the war by the time I was born.
I was like, wow, this man here. But yeah, Russ is great. And that book,
again, Honorable Intentions.
Honorable Intentions. Please, you know, pick that book up. It's a good book. I think you'd be surprised on some of the things that he's actually telling you. As far as what goes on or what has went on and what will continue to go
happen.
On.
Yep. Check it out, guys. Moving on to our third segment, this is Political Propaganda, where we break down different stories. Again, anything that we discuss can be accessed in the website at reeferrhetoric.com. This first one, you want to talk about it a little bit, Blunson? This is talking about how these billionaire drug lords are banking on America's war on drugs. And we got people like El Chapo Guzman, Pablo Escobar, and the Ocho Brothers.
Yeah, the Ochoa Brothers. Yeah, but basically, Pablo Escobar, he's gone, and the Ochoa Brothers, I don't know what's going on with them. None of those guys came out and actually said, thank you, President Obama. Thank you, Bush Jr., Bush Sr. He forgot to mention Clinton, but he said, thank you, Reagan, okay?
He's basically just thanking the president
for
continuing this
war
on drugs.
Yes, for his amount of wealth that he has accumulated. He has thanked our government. He's in our faces.
So, you know what? Speaking of that, didn't you just recently send a letter to President Obama in the White House? You want me to read this letter that
you could read the letter.
This was from Blunston to Obama that he wrote. You can just Google the White House and you can send a letter, guys. How many other cartel members are going to have to come out and show their financial worth off selling drugs before we end the prohibition on drugs? The 701st richest man in the world has come out and thanked the last five United States presidents for keeping the prohibition going and making him a billionaire. Escobar didn't have the balls to say it, but we know he became a multimillionaire off of drugs. Reagan did flood the country with cocaine using Oliver North and nothing happened. North is now an anchorman on TV. End this prohibition now or we will begin a letter to get you impeached. We're sick of this war on American citizens and the greedy politicians trying to keep the prohibition alive so their pockets can continue to be lined.
That's what's happening.
It is what's happening.
That's
very blunt and to the point, and it's truth.
End it. End this prohibition, people.
Stop the propaganda. People, end this prohibition.
Write letters. Go ahead and send letters to the White House and let them know. We need this. This needs to end, okay?
We have a voice as American citizens, people. We have a voice in this world for people that are listening outside of America. Everyone, we need to speak up. Let your government know that you're sick of this crap and that we're ready to re-legalize cannabis and legalize it for all use.
So therefore, we could work with jobs. There's all kind of jobs, okay? And then this fuel. We know, okay, people, we know that hempoline can be produced off of hemp. And this oil, we don't have to deal with it. We could produce enough hemp to create our fuel, food, homes, everything we need. We need to end this prohibition on cannabis.
We're fed up with it. We really are. And unfortunately, a lot of these stories we discussed are today going to be part of this political propaganda, but we've got to cover it. And this is just more proof that we need to end this war. This next story actually comes out of Reuters. It's entitled, Ninjas Rob Medical Marijuana Delivery Man in California.
Now, before we even get into this story, as we read this, and I kind of know, and the reason I know this is because I lived in California, okay? I was around this type stuff. You do not know who's delivering cannabis. You do not know the person. He's not driving around in a cannabis delivery car like Domino's Pizza, okay? So, this robbery was an inside job. Somewhere along the line that came from the inside, whether it was the delivery person who has told someone what he... Well, of course, a lot of times, you're not supposed to even tell your friends that's what you do, because, of course, your friends get pissed, so forth and so on. But either it was someone that the delivery person personally knew, okay, right, or someone inside that had to set that up for the delivery person, because basically, you don't know who was delivering cannabis. You don't right. know.
I'll just read the first couple sentences, guys. It says, a medical marijuana delivery man lost a bag of cash and pot on Friday night when he was robbed by two men dressed as ninjas and armed with batons, police said. The masked ninjas confronted the delivery man outside an apartment building in West Covina, California, about 20 miles east of Los Angeles. So if you guys want to read more, I mean, that's basically the premise of the story. So
you see, look at that, okay? So they dressed up in ninja suits, and they had weapons, but overall, they didn't have weapons. Those batons, of course, they could beat your ass, and then you'd... And if they were karate, if they were martial arts
If
trained,
they were even intending to do that.
It was more of a scare tactic. That's all that was, and the batons. So you see, that right there tell you that that was a setup. That was inside. That... Because how do you... Come on, man. Oh, just a ninja just sitting around the complex out front, and here comes some guy with a... You don't know, man. Let's move on.
This next one is out of Huffington Post. It's entitled, Michigan Medical Marijuana Law Challenged. State Senate Bill 977 would ban glaucoma patient use. Straight propaganda, guys. The sponsor of a state Senate bill in Michigan is looking to outlaw the use of medical marijuana by glaucoma patients. In 2008, voters passed the Michigan Medical Marijuana Act, which allows state-registered patients to use the herb to treat certain medical conditions. Senate Bill 977, approved in a state Senate committee last week, would prevent the state licensing agency from issuing medical marijuana cards for glaucoma and remove it from the list of debilitating conditions. I mean, this is absolutely absurd. The state senator that's sponsoring this legislation is Rick Jones. So...
I don't understand what Rick Jones' problem is, okay? The use of medical cannabis for glaucoma, that was one of the first initial arguments that came up 20 years ago, that it, along with AIDS patients, mm-hmm. okay, patients that had glaucoma, it gave them some sort of relief. Now, what they're saying is, Or what we're actually saying is, we're not saying, you know, if you're a glaucoma patient, we're not saying that the eye drops that they give you, we're not saying, no,
not
don't use
it.
That.
Yeah, use the
cannabis.
Prescription eye drops,
right,
still,
but,
absolutely.
But the cannabis is what helped relieve the pressure.
The pressure,
okay?
In your eyes.
Exactly.
Correct.
Eye drops do not do that. And then if they do want to, or if there is an eye drop that does that, that means it has an anesthetic in that eye drop. I don't think there's an anesthetic in eye drops. I don't, yeah, so basically you're smoking it or using the tincture or whatever you're doing to relieve the pain, to relieve the pressure.
Correct. Moving on. This next story is out of Missoulin.com. It's entitled Federal Marijuana Raid in Flathead County Leads to Guilty Plea. A 33-year-old Whitefish man pleaded guilty Monday to federal drug charges related to a raid of his medical marijuana dispensary last March. Christopher Ryan Durbin entered the guilty pleas during a hearing in U.S. District Court in Missoula, admitting to charges of conspiracy to manufacture and distribute marijuana and structuring or making bank deposits of less than $10,000 in order to avoid IRS reporting requirements. Sentencing is scheduled for June 29th. He faces a mandatory minimum of 5 years in prison, but could be sentenced to 40 years and fined $2 million. Again, this is this continuation of this war on drugs going on, and if y'all want to read more, definitely click the story in
the show
notes.
And that's riff. I mean, you know, that's riff in itself. It's kind of, I just don't know what to say about that.
I don't know what to say
the
either.
The prisons are already, you know, filled
enough with
non-violent offenders, and here it is. This man has a dispensary. He did what he was supposed to do to open the dispensary, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have the federal government using our taxpaying money, because basically they are going to spend a lot of money to they have spent a lot of money to look like to prosecute him, maybe. I mean, it's what it looks like.
And granted, they're saying that he was distributing cannabis to people inside and outside of Montana. But once again, in my opinion, this is just a result of this prohibition. This plant shouldn't be illegal in the first place. There should be nothing illegal about moving a plant off from one state to another. I mean, really? Moving on. This next story comes out of Kalispell. It's entitled Kalispell Landlord Faces Prison for tenant's medical marijuana operation. This also comes out of Missoula. Evan Quorum of Whitefish got 6 months in federal prison and another 6 of house arrest after federal agents busted his medical marijuana operation last year. Michael Kastner of Kalispell got a year and a day for his involvement in another medical cannabis use. So did Tyler Rowe. Jonathan Janetsky, charged along with Kastner and Rowe, is looking at up to 3 years in prison, according to his lawyer, Todd Glacier of Kalispell. But he says Janetsky didn't grow marijuana, he didn't sell it, he was the landlord. Quote, he has no criminal history, Glacier said. He just rented to some people. Again, product of prohibition. This is something that's happening to a landlord that's just simply renting out a place for these people to use and distribute medical cannabis in a state that voted for it to be legal.
Right. Something's wrong with that picture. So the people's will is, I mean, their constitution is just thrown out the window.
It is thrown
out the
window.
Rights. So the people's rights, these people have no rights there. So basically they could vote on something and their city and state government allow it, but the feds could come in and say no?
I am absolutely tired of the federal government stepping in. There's something big time wrong with that picture.
So the people have voted it, yes.
They voted it, yes.
But you know what? It's just like Rush Jones just said. What's going to have to happen, okay, is all the states just say, hey, let's do this. Let the games begin.
Let the games begin.
All of the states are going to have to say, hey, let the games begin.
We,
the
people, have to step up and make that happen.
Yes.
All the states and people, again, that are listening across the world, make it happen where you are too. If we all speak up as a giant voice, America will have to listen.
Because basically, we already have other countries that are listening.
We do. And we already have other countries taking steps in the right direction.
Right.
And America already needs to wake their ass up.
Yeah, the entire country here needs to wake up, not just half the country. And then, no, come on, people, either we're gonna go broke here, something's gonna happen funky here, or you all going to go ahead and re-legalize something that has been legal, like I say, of basically one, has been illegal for 1% of the entire time we've been here on Earth. So it has been illegal longer than we've been here.
That's right. That's right. And okay? It makes no sense. So it has been legal and in use. Stop it.
Quit it.
Briefly touching on our continued Reefer Rhetoric 2012 Stop the Political Propaganda Tour, guys, we'll be in College Station, Texas on Friday, April 6th at Texas A&M University. Friday through Sunday, April 20th through 22nd, we'll be in Austin, Texas for the Reggae Fest. And on Saturday, May 5th, we'll be in Austin, Texas for the Global Cannabis March.
And between those different dates, people, we're usually out in your cities on the weekends. It just kind of depends on, you know, during the week. You just never know where you're going to see us and pop, you know, we're going to pop up at the bookstores and various places. So these are just cities that are
definitely
set.
Scheduled.
Yeah,
right.
On the calendar, exactly.
But just because something's not on this calendar doesn't mean we won't be showing up.
Right. Exactly. You never know, you know, when you will see Dean Schwag or myself. So
keep an eye out for us and just shoot an email. Shoot us an email too.
Yeah,
I mean, anytime.
Let
us know where you are
and
what's going on.
Yeah, we need to know because, you know, they try to keep a lot of the cannabis events and stuff like that under wraps. So, I mean, you know, just
email us. proplunston@gmail.com.
Let us know what's
going on. DeanSchwag@gmail.com, guys. So get in touch with us. This next portion of the show is brought to you by Gilligan Smoking Stuff out of Waco, Texas.
For the finest water pipes in Central Texas, come by and visit Gilligan's Smoking Stuff located at 916 South Valley Mills Drive in Waco, Texas. Or come visit us on the web at www.hotsmokeshop.com. Spring break is right around the corner. For all your fine discraft needs, come by Gilligan's Smoke Shop. For novelties, come by Gilligan's Smoking Stuff. For your finest hookahs, water pipes, and pipes, we just say no to imported crap. So come see us at Gilligan's Smoking Stuff located at 916 South Valley Mills Drive. Or you may call us at 254-732-4888.
All right. As usual, that will bring us to our fourth and final segment, the Reefer Rhetoric Awards. All right. The anti-cannabis politician of the week goes to
Michigan Senator Prick Jones.
There we go, Senator Prick Jones. Our pro-cannabis story of the week is talking about Arkansas working to get medical cannabis on bill. If you guys want to see that story, definitely click it in the show notes.
Yes.
Finally, our Freedom Fighters of the Week go to...
You know, we're going to change it up, and we're going to give the Freedom Fighters of the Week... Once again, we have a kind of a group. We're going to give the Freedom Fighters of the Week to Russ Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're going to also give it to...
Alan
Crothers. Okay. Mm-hmm. And we're going to also give it to the people of Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you all for being freedom fighters once again.
Okay, guys, that will wrap up episode 14 of Reefer Rhetoric. Stop the political propaganda.
Quit it. Stop it.
And as usual, I'm your host, Dean Schwag.
And I'm Professor Blunston.
We look forward to talking to you guys again next week.
But this legal fat thing, she a me darling. A lick